Welcome to our program. I'm your host, Tom Majeur, and we're talking about wildfires today. Wildfires, it's part of a series that we'll be doing, and who better to be doing the series with is the U.S. Forest Service. With us today, we have Brian Stearns, Officer Brian Stearns, and his specialty is Prescribes Fuel Officer. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you.
And we also have Deborah Ann
Brabazon.
Deborah Ann, thank you so much. You're the Public Information Officer, and you also have specialties in fire management also.
That's correct.
Very good. Before we get started, let's have a word of prayer. Our great Heavenly Father, we want to thank you for the opportunity to be good stewards of nature. And Lord, be with us as we discuss this subject, that we will touch on subjects that are meaningful to our listeners and further our stewardship of the earth. And we thank you in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, welcome, Brian. The subject of wildfires. What is one of the most common misperception about wildfires?
A common one that we find here locally, I would say, is the fact that most of our wildfires here are anthropogenic, or they're started by humans. And in the western states, you find that it's more lightning caused, or what they'll term as natural ignitions. So here it's typically folks that are not paying attention to what they're doing. They're maybe burning trash or debris or having a recreational campfire, and they leave them unattended for a few minutes. And then the rapidity of how quickly that gets away from them is usually what shocks people.
Yeah, and I'm sure that once a person has done that, there's a lot of even remorse or concern, and it's like, oh boy, what have I done? How do I mitigate this circumstance?
Right. Because especially if it burns onto private property, there's probably legal ramifications that would be, you know, as a result of that.
And Deborah Ann, so good to have you with us. We're looking forward to doing a series of these programs. And what is probably the most asked question by people about wildfires?
I don't think there's any particular frequently asked question other than, can we burn today? Okay. That probably is the most common one from the public. And I think that people, they don't always know that they can go to the DNR's website to look to see if they're issuing, or we also have been announcing what our fire danger is. And we tell people, you know, if it's windy, don't burn. If it's hot and dry and windy, don't burn. And really, when you're working on your property and you have fuels, you don't really need to burn. And we can talk about some alternatives to burning today.
Okay. Let's talk about the U.S. Forest Service. How big is the U.S. Forest Service? And one of the things that most people don't understand, it's under the Agriculture Department.
Yeah, I don't know, Brian, do you want to address that? You have probably more history with the Forest Service than I do.
Yeah, the Huron-Manistee National Forest is roughly 500,000 acres. So 250,000, the east side, which is termed as the Huron National Forest, and then the equivalent amount called the Manistee National Forest on the west side of the state.
So basically, this is much of the land in the northern part of Michigan is in the U.S. Forest Service.
Yeah, when you combine that with any, you know, state forests as well, there's the Park Service has some properties up here, and the DOD has some around Grayling. Yep, quite a bit of public land in northern Michigan.
Our subject today is about wildfires. Where should we start with wildfires, Brian?
Wildfire, probably you'd want to start with preventing them. So we're mitigating the impacts that wildfires could have to your private property.
Okay. So people need to know probably more than they know that they know. So what are some of the basics on wildfire prevention?
Well, you know, we kind of touched on not leaving fires unattended, but there's a lot of mitigations you can do around your property, your homes, those kinds of things to help kind of protect those in case there was a unintended wildfire. And a big thing is keeping brush and debris, natural debris, kind of cleared away from the homes. If you have lots of trees on the property, you can trim up the ladder fuels, what we term as ladder fuels. And those are kind of the branchy, the limbs and things that grow off the side of the tree that grow, you know, down towards the surface. So by trimming those up to, you know, a third of the total height of the tree, or at least getting them up, you know, if 6 to 10 feet would suffice for most of our wildfires.
And the purpose of that is because of the ground fires, you don't want it to start igniting the trees?
Exactly. So fires typically will start on the surface, burning in leaves and debris. And then when they come into contact, especially with conifer trees like our pines and some of the balsam firs and spruces, then it can, in some certain circumstances, it can start the crowns on that. And then if the crowns are close enough, you know, the contact of those crowns can propagate from one tree to the other.
And the crowns are the tops of the trees.
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, yep. Not a problem. And so we talked about around your house, and you have different zones around the house that you want to be careful about. Probably more concerned about the first 30 to 100 feet, or maybe the 0 to 30. And what do you do with each one of those zones?
Yeah, so starting out adjacent to the house, there's kind of a 5 foot, 3 to 5 foot buffer that you want to keep as much of the natural materials out of that area as possible.
Combustible materials.
Exactly.
You can have natural materials like stones and so on and so forth.
Right. Yep. And then outside of that, you're kind of creating these buffer rings that you know, different mitigations at different distances from the home. But within that first 30 feet, you want to make sure that there's no crown-to-crown contact of any trees, that everything's kind of brushed up, limbed up, all the ladder fuels are removed. And then outside of that, then, you know, the spacing can, and the limbing can kind of taper off.
Very good. Deborah, Ann, could you add anything to that?
Definitely. When you're looking at the home ignition zone and you're looking at your extended zones, one of the things that people think is that it's probably really expensive to mitigate my property, and that's not true. A lot of what we do on a regular annual basis with cleaning up our property is we're mitigating that wildfire risk. So every time we mow our lawn, every time we rake our leaves, every time we move our wood pile closer and further to the back door, we're actually addressing those combustible fuels that could lead to an accidental start. So let's say, for instance, we're working on doing the vegetation around our home in that 0 to 5 buffer around the foundation of the home. And we want to make sure that we have minimized the risk of an ember sitting there and potentially starting a fire. Because when we do get fires, and especially large conflagrations like we get out west, they tend to create these ember events that look like windstorms, and instead of leaves or snow, it's embers. So embers behave just like a snowstorm or a leaf storm, and they'll begin to collect and eddy in specific areas around your house.
In circles.
Yes.
And vortexes.
Yeah. So when you go to clean out the corner of where your patio meets the house, you're going to say, oh, look at all these leaves. Well, that's a place where if you had an ember storm, an ember could land and very easily ignite that and start fire close to your foundation of your home. Now, I have lived out east in Pennsylvania where I'm from, and most of our homes were stone or brick, or they had some type of cement or stone foundation. And Michigan was the first place I moved to where I have a wood foundation. And I never knew that was something they did, but I guess because of the soil type and being so porous, that's something that you can build in this environment. So when we started fireproofing our property a couple years ago, we started skirting the property with stone. So we laid down a fabric, and then we used septic stone to create a buffer. And then in that buffer, I planted no plants. However, the Michigan State University Extension Office online, and I can share that link with you, actually has a list of fire-resistant plants that you can use for landscaping that are not so prone to wildfire. And those are things that you can put in, things like Rudbeckia or black-eyed Susans, pink and purple coneflower, white coneflower, yucca, things that actually hold more water by nature because of the type of plant they are, or a succulent. And that actually then creates this beautiful environment, but you don't have something that's highly flammable and going to easily ignite because they hold a lot of moisture themselves. So another thing when you're looking at this 0 to 5, keeping your weeds down, mowing, especially that home ignition zone from the edge of the house out 30 feet. If you keep it lean, clean, and green, you're actually creating an environment that's safe not only for the homeowner to move around, but also first responders, police, ambulance, maybe the electric company, the gas company, if they have to come off and come out and turn off your utilities because of a fire or there's other issues. Having that area clean allows them to have an area where they can visibly see if they're going to be stepping on something or tripping over something. And there's quite a few homes that allow their vegetation to get high because they just want that appearance for the wildlife to come in. But actually, when you have flashy fuels like grass, they ignite very fast. They take less than an hour to dry out in the right conditions. And as soon as the fire gets in there, it moves very quickly. If your grass is lower and closer to the ground, you'll find that if fire is moving through a field where the grass is real high, as soon as it hits that grass that's low, it drops. And then firefighters can easily get in and extinguish that fire when the fire flames are much lower.
Very good. Listeners, you're listening to a Strong Tower Radio program, and we're talking about wildfires. And particularly, we're talking about, this is the first in a series, about fuel reduction around the home. Now, Brian, many, you know, if you live out in the country and you're close to our area, your fire response time is maybe greater than you would be in an urban area. Does that make it more important that if you have a country home to maybe be a little bit more aggressive and more cognizant of these fire zones?
Yeah, that's a great point. Response times tend to diminish the further you get from urban areas. And for the response that, you know, the Forest Service would be providing within their response area, you could probably guess, you know, a half hour minimum would be our response time because we cover so many different townships and typically 3, maybe 4 different counties that we all have to cover with limited resources. So long drive times.
The other thing to think about is that if you're in a fire event, that those limited resources are stretched even further. So response time is going to be actually increased greater. Let's say if it's a widespread wildfire event, it's kind of like every man for himself. Every person needs to protect their own homes. We've seen that sometimes out west where the homeowner is trying to keep the fire at bay until others can respond. Can you?
Right. And, you know, your best bet is to have that work done before the wildfire starts. Otherwise, especially around here, the rate of spread for our typical wildfires are really fast, especially if we get into the conifer components like our pines, especially jack pine. We can have, you know, over 1 mile an hour rates of spread. Spotting distances can go over 1 mile ahead of the main fire. So definitely will outpace any kind of apparatus that would be trying to suppress that fire. So yeah, if you have any hope of, you know, your property doing well in those situations, the work has to be done before the fire starts.
In other words, you really most of the time don't want to be fighting the fire itself. You'd rather to have the prevention and the buffers.
Well, yeah, you know, if you think about a wildfire that's got like over a mile of flame front, there might be 30 homes in its path. And, you know, we can only do one at a time. So,
right. And you'd rather, if they have to wait, you better be prepared.
Right.
Deborah Ann, any thoughts?
Well, I think it's really important for us to be able to first define the difference between prevention and mitigation.
Very good.
Because they're really two entirely different animals. Mitigation is creating the barrier so that fire cannot spread. You're taking fuel away from the landscape so that fire cannot move forward. You're mitigating the issue. Prevention is preventing an unwanted fire from starting. So that's extinguishing your campfires, cool your barbecue coals, make sure they're dead out and cold to the touch. Keeping, if you are burning, keeping your pile small, not tall, never leaving it unattended. And then the other thing is looking at things that we do with equipment. You know, the number one causes of wildfires for the Forest Service that we respond to, the first one is going to be debris burning, people burning their trash. The second is equipment, such as chains that are loose, dragging on a trailer, tires that are underinflated and they're sparking on the rims. And then you're also looking at ATV spark arresters, chainsaw spark arresters, power lines. There's all sorts of equipment and other things that go into that particular category. And then lastly, campfires, whether they're a recreational campfire for oohing and aahing around the camp area, the campground in the evening, or they're used for cooking your meal, or you're actually using it as a warming fire. So there are times where we want to have a fire, but being the responsible adult taking the measures to keep that fire from spreading is really what we try to promote. It's okay to have that campfire. It's okay to have that cooking fire. It's okay to burn your debris. But are you doing it in such a safe manner that we won't have to respond in the future?
Ryan, do you have something to add to that?
She hit all the high points there.
All right. What would you like to talk about next, Deborah? Ann?
I think one of the things that I really would like to stress is that when we talk to the communities about fuel reductions, one of the things that is a very common concern is cost, time, and manpower. It's really important for people to understand that when it comes to cost, a lot of the things that we're asking people to do to mitigate their properties are things that are primarily sweat equity and minimal cost. There may be some chainsaw fuel, bar oil, maybe sharpening of your chain or an extra chain, and then maybe a bunch of you who are all living within proximity to each other want to get a chipper. There are actually ways in which to fund that. And then the manpower, there's always Boy Scouts that are looking for Eagle Scout projects. There are Girl Scouts looking for their Girl Scout projects for their awards. Then you also have church groups that would be interested in doing community service. And then you also have other concerned homeowners associations. When it comes to renting a chipper, that can actually be a costly thing because it's usually done by the day. And if you're smart and can figure out who has the best price and timing, you can get it on a Friday and return it on a Monday. But the International Association of Fire Chiefs actually has a program where the volunteer fire departments can register with the Ready, Set, Go program. And once they do, that allows them information and materials to be sent to them for free. They give them the type of information to help homeowners make intelligent, educated decisions about how to manage their fuels around their home. And they also have grants available for cleanup things like chippers. So you make a work party out of maybe May 4th, which is usually Community Wildfire Day, and you get your homeowners association together along with your volunteer fire department chief, and you start looking for some of those venues. There's a lot of information out there on the internet on how to do these things. And there are lots of people who are really good at organizing. So a lot of the times, it's not about the money or the time. It's about finding the right resources to make it happen.
How do you start a program, get your community involved? How do you start the buzz?
I think first you really need to talk to a lot of your local government officials, your township supervisors, your volunteer fire departments, your homeowners associations, concerned citizens, you know, civic groups, church groups. A variety of people want to see their environment saved, especially in communities where tourism, ecotourism, is a very huge component of their economy. So if we start looking at, well, if, you know, we go out and we maintain this trailhead out on the county lands, you know, maybe we can get some county volunteers, or maybe there's some people who are required by a judge to have community service work. Maybe there's a possibility that we can get the court system behind what we're doing and allow them to participate in this project as part of their community service work. And then another thing to look at too is when we're starting to look at these bigger money draws, like some of the budget infrastructure legislation that has gone through, where there's money available for communities to do community wildfire prevention plans. You have to look at some of the ordinances that are required in order to apply for those grants. So maybe there's a township who is looking at expanding in one area with maybe a new housing development. They can actually pass ordinances that require any new construction is required to have a certain fire-rated roof on that property. And then as we start getting into looking at some of the things that we can do as a community, it's not just about fuels reduction, but it's also the home assessment. There are a lot of elderly people who cannot get up on a ladder anymore to clean off their gutters or their roofs. And this is where community service work is really important, because we're giving back to the people who came before us. And I'm a huge proponent of making sure that our elders are taken care of. Because one day I will be an elder and I would like someone to be able to clean my gutters and my roof for me. So one of the things that you would do to help with the home hardening is what we call it, is we would look at doing the home ignition zone. And that home ignition zone is, we're looking at the house itself. So when we look at the house, one of the first things you look at when you see a house is, especially when you go to buy one, is
the roof.
So we're going to look at the quality of the roof. Is it metal? Is it shingle? Does it have a lot of gables and valleys? Is it in need of repair? So if it is in need of repair, when you're going to factor in how you're going to repair, think about its prevention aspect of fire. If you have an ember land on it, okay, an ember doesn't just have to come from an ember storm. It can come from your brush pile. It can come from your campfire. It can come from a house fire several blocks away or several feet and yards away. It just takes one ember to land in that one spot that was not mitigated. So it could be a hole in the shingles where you have bare roof showing, or maybe you have a pile of leaves down the valley in the roof, or the gable is coming apart and there's a spot in there that needs to be fixed, or the eave. So there's a lot of things that when we look at the roof, we not only look at the health of the roof and the material it's made of, but what is on it? Is it growing moss? Is it in a shaded area where it doesn't get a lot of sun and maybe it's starting to rot? And then when it dries out, all that rotted material is going to be fodder for an ember to start a fire. And then we're also looking at the gutters. When we look at the gutters, are our gutters full? Do we have covers on them? Is it a home for a chipmunk or a squirrel to be hiding its nuts? Do we have small amounts of vegetation growing in them? Are the downspouts clean? That's another thing to do, is to put covers over the downspouts at the bottom and at the top to keep that debris from jamming it up, so at least the water can still drain and get out. But also, rodents can't get in there and build nests. Another thing that we look at when we look at home hardening on the ignition zone is looking at the windows. Are they single pane? Are they double pane? Are they broken? Are they cracked? Are they in need of replacement? Sometimes you can actually get inexpensive replacements or work with other agencies in your county that have inexpensive ways in which to replace them. And then there's other programs that you can look at for funding of those. I'm not familiar with them themselves. I haven't had to replace any windows, thank goodness, but I do know they can be expensive. And then also you have crawl spaces or you have vents in your attic. Making sure that those vents actually have some type of hardware cloth that's a very small mesh where airflow can still get in, but an ember can't. There have been stories about homes out west where the fire had gone through and embers had gotten into the vents during the wind activity and landed in the insulation. So for several days afterwards, nobody went upstairs to check the attic. And finally, enough heat had built up with that ember that some air got in there, and then the house started on fire. And there was no reason for it. Sometimes you also have rodents that have nests built in areas that if an ember gets into, that can also start a fire. So you always want to make sure you're checking for that hardware cloth, and not only in the attic, but the basement as well.
Well, Deborah Ann and Brian, it's been a pleasure to have you as part of our first in the series of talking about fuel reductions around the home. You know, this is new to many of our listeners who we know that out west they need to do that, but that's viable here. We have fire danger frequently posted for northern Michigan and across the state. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. We're looking forward to the next section that we're going to be talking about of wildfires and fire reduction. I'm your host, Tom Azure, for Strong Tower Radio. Bye now.